evening and welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, tension brews at Patinga as women and children flee the town. What is the reason behind this latest development? 6 electoral areas in Akusi suspended from biometric registration. We find out from the ECY. Government and Hospital Pharmacists Association in crunch meeting with the Ministry of Health. Is there any solution in sight to deal with gospel strike and moves to reconcile former President Rawlings and President Mills? Is it too late or a step in the right direction? Even though a curfew has been imposed on the Patinga Township in the northern region following the installation of 2 chiefs by the Abudu and the Andani royal families, there are reports of tension in the township. Report says women and children are fleeing the town. But what is causing this tension? Mumuni Mohammed Shaban is the assemblyman for Balogun North, and he was at Patinga this afternoon and has joined us on the line. Good evening, Mr. Shaban, and thanks for your time.
Good evening.
Can you tell us?
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Can you tell us what the situation is at Patinga?
Yes. At 3 p.m., as I was leaving Patinga, I could see some people, some Muslim women and children fleeing the village. Some carrying their mattresses and other belongings to their farms and others to the bushes. I could also see some in the clinic. When I talked to some of them, a lady who happened to be a sister, I talked to her, and she said she was fleeing for her life because she could not afford to witness the emergence of violence for the sake, for the fact that there were 2 chiefs in the village.
So, as we speak, can you tell us the security situation?
Yeah, the people are scared. Generally, if you look at the people, they were very scared of the situation, given the fact that the curfew was in place and that, according to them, one faction was allowed to roam while others were indoor during the curfew hours, and that the second chief was brought in by the security later. That was 2 days ago. Was under civil security protection, while the first chief, who was already in the town and was accepted by the people, is left without security. And all mostly you could find most of the people in the town in front of the palace of the first chief in the person of the Zulim, Nazulim Al-Hassan, and you could see that the palace which actually belongs to the first chief's father, which is now occupied by the second chief, was very vacant. It was actually vacant. The palace was vacant. You could still at least find relatives of the second chief in the palace.
How is the curfew being managed? Because if the curfew is enforced well, there wouldn't be the need for people to run away from the town.
Yeah. As I was talking to some of them, they were saying that for the first time they have never seen such magnitude of security presence in their village, and that was the first time they could find so many police and that of a military, and also a Mohawk in their midst. And that they could not tell what the circumstance will turn into.
So is the presence...
They said the sceptic, which in their view was unnecessary, because there was no fighting, only that the chief was skinned, and later that chief was arrested and released for no charge, and later he was brought out of the palace by the security, and a few days afterwards, a second chief was brought by the security to occupy that palace. That was what was they were saying. And then, and you could see that the people, most of them, were actually against the decision of the security and the actions of the security. That is bringing in or removing their chief and bringing in a chief to imposing a chief on them. So they, and some of them, you could find the youth. Most of the youth were angry, and they were in front of the first chief's palace. And some Muslim women who were fighting were just fleeing.
Mr. Shaban, is the heavy policemen in the town the reason why people are fleeing?
Yeah. I told you earlier on, that was the first time they set eyes on that number of policemen and that of security. For them, it was unprecedented. You could say, Petra has no police station. It has no police station at all. And nearly, for the first time in their life, this is the first time they are seeing a policeman in their village. I mean, we talk of the military and that of the MOAC. And also, some of them said that the presence of two chiefs means danger to them.
Mr. Shaban, is the tension having any impact on the biometric registration?
Yes, certainly. As my interest was, however, to find out whether the conversation was going on. And you can see that most of them, mostly, they had, some of them, if you ask them whether they made the registration, they said no, they were not interested in registering because they wanted to protect their chief. And others were saying that they could not stay because of the registration to be politically involved in any skirmishes.
So have you made it known to the EC, and what has been the response?
When I came back, since then, that was in the afternoon, around 3 p.m., I went to the EC office. And as you know, I also have rounds to make within my local area. Whatever is happening in Petra has a direct impact on the security situation in Yengi. Because we have been talking to the youth to stay calm as we are sorting out things with the security and that of the traditional authorities. Because challenging this distancy institutions is so linked to the fact that to the central tune, that is the Dada, the second scheme. Whatever is happening in the peripheral has an impact on the. And the central authorities.
All right, so you are grateful for your time.
Has reactions from Yengi. So we have been taken to the news to sit down and let cool heads prevail.
All right, many thanks for joining us. That was Mumuni Mohammed Shaban, the assemblyman for Balogun North. Meanwhile, the political leadership has declined to comment on the issue. According to them, the Northern Regional Security Council will meet tomorrow to deliberate on the situation. Matt, joining us as the Executive Director of the West Africa Network for Peace Building, Dr. Emmanuel Bombandi. Many thanks for joining us.
Hello, good evening, madam.
You heard Mr. Shaban. So how should the security situation at Patenga be handled?
Well, first of all, we have to accept that what the Northern Regional Security Council is doing and ought to do is how do you protect the lives of civilians and how do you contain the violence from further escalating, and in so doing, try to see how a situation that is normal can return to Katanga. But as we talk like this, let us not forget that we are trying to deal with the symptoms. And to that extent, violence would continue to be a cycle that would come with the type of events such as the registration exercise currently going, precisely because it is simply a microcosm of a bigger issue which has not yet been addressed. And that is the bigger dimension of the Dagmar crisis. To the extent that you don't deal with the fundamental issues that are at stake, For example, who has the legitimate right to enskin a chief? What is the processes of enskinning a chief? To what extent does that now become a process that is inclusive and satisfactory to both Abudus and Andanis? To the extent that we are not able to do this at the macro level and that it is not satisfactory, what you see happening is that at the micro level, you would have these types of occurrences of violence. And to respond to your question, what the Regional Security Council can do is to contain it, make sure that it does not further spread, but that does not necessarily address the root, which is the fundamental issue. And that is basically what we find ourselves in today.
Mr. Shaban talked about heavy police security presence there. That's why most women and children are fleeing the town. Should the number of policemen be reduced, or what should be done?
Well, on that specific issue, I want to believe that our security agencies, in their assessment of the situation, have determined the type of presence that is required to contain the violence. Because the other side of the coin is that if you send in only a few police men and women, and the violence overwhelms them, and we begin to have loss of life in numbers, then the image and credibility of Ghana would go down. So if you were to ask of my opinion, I prefer more police presence on the ground, if it even requires the backup support of the military, so that we prevent people from being killed, we prevent the violence from taking lives and destroying property, whilst we now go back and try to see how we begin again to talk about the fundamental issues at stake and deal with them, than to say that reduce the police, and then in reducing the police, it's better that they are fleeing than they are being killed or we find them dead. I think of the two evils, it's better that we have a presence of the security that prevents loss of life and protects property from being destroyed.
In your earlier submission, you talked about the Dagbon crisis. Do you think the situation has become an albatross?
Madam, I'll prefer not to use that kind of, so to speak, adjective. But let me say that without calling it an albatross, I would, without any hesitation, say that we have refused as a nation collectively to put our efforts in a way that addresses those fundamental issues. And maybe the best way to be able to answer your question is, let me reframe it as if I was asking you a question. If you recall the work of the Waku Commission in Sunyani, we had a consistent process day to day when the commission sat down with the two families, the Abudu and the Andani, to try and reach conclusions about who was behind the murder of the Yana and his elders and so on. But that was limited to an investigative process to determine who actually was responsible for the killings. Why are we not giving the same amount of seriousness and attention in how we are promoting dialogue, how we are bringing the Abudus and the Andanis together to sit down and talk about those fundamental issues I've described with you? That, for me, is the reason why Dagbon, we can describe it as an albatross. It's not because we cannot respond and solve it, but we have refused to provide the type of necessary commitment through dialogue on a sustainable basis to ensure that we reach the bottom of this matter. And unfortunately, every year, we have now celebrated 10 years and we continue to find ourselves in such a divide.
So, Dr. Bombande, what is the way forward then?
Sorry, go ahead.
What is the way forward then, 10 years after the rift between the Abudus and Andanis?
I have advocated and I have argued that at the end of the day, we can do whatever we want to do until we are able to have a process in which the Abudu family, the Abudu royal family, and the Andani royal family are able to sit down and engage themselves in the processes that reaches a mutual agreement on the future of Dagbon. And of course, in that process, what families then would agree, how do we deal with the justice question? And the justice question is not an end in itself, but how does the justice question invite the state to help us deal with it in order that we can reconcile? If the process of dialogue does not lead to this, we would see ourselves going around every year and every year. But once this happens, let's not forget that the promise that awaits Gabon, the promise that awaits Ghana, the future, the children and their future continuously is held back by this type of violence, which is not good, not only for Gabon, but also not good for Ghana.
We are grateful for your time. That was Executive Director of the West Africa Network for Peace Building, Dr. Emmanuel Bombande. It's still behind the news live on Radio Ghana and on all our regional FM stations across the country. Test line is 0266-677-5570. Send us your comments. We will read them to you. Is it too late or a step in the right direction as the 10 regional ministers make moves to reconcile former President Rawlings and President John Evans Atta Mills? At a meeting in Kumasi yesterday, all the regional ministers agreed to mobilize a number of traditional rulers throughout the country to lead a team of mediators to help mend the relations between the two leaders. But what informed this initiative? Mark Wuyongo, as the Upper East Regional Minister, was part of the meeting and he has joined us on the line. Many thanks for your time.
It's a pleasure.
What informed this decision?
What informed the decision was that sometime last week, some chiefs came to my office in Bolgatanga and informed me that they were going to get a number of chiefs to go and talk to the former president about the need for reconciliation. And I said, oh, it was a brilliant idea, but they should give me time. I'll discuss the issue with my colleague ministers in the northern and upper west regions. Fortunately, at the weekend, I met the two ministers. I discussed the issue with them, and they said it was perfectly in order. So we should get some representatives to join the Upper East, chiefs to go to see the former president. But then when we got to Kumasi yesterday for our regional ministers meeting, because the meeting was meant to share experiences, challenges, and then to collectively see how we can solve some of these challenges. So I decided to share this issue with them, and fortunately, after sharing the issue, and most of them, in fact, all of them agreed that it was a brilliant idea. There was a need to give it a chance, to give it a trial. So they all agreed it was a good idea. So they would also encourage chiefs in their regions to join their colleagues in the Upper East region to go and see how best they can broker some kind of reconciliation. And that is how the issue came up. It's not as if we're in Kumasi solely to discuss this reconciliation thing. It was on other matters. I mentioned this thing, and my colleagues thought it was a good idea. They should be upheld. And that's why how it came up that this issue was discussed.
So, in effect, you are going to use traditional rulers to mend the rifts between former President Rawlings and President Mills.
We are not going to use the traditional rulers. They themselves mooted the idea, and we think that it is a good step. It's a step in the right direction, and they should be encouraged. They should be supported.
Many people are arguing that this should have been done much earlier, as in trying to mend the relation between former President Rawlings and President Mills.
I agree, but you also agree with me that it is rather better late than never. If we are able to get them reconciled now, I think it's better than not just doing anything at all.
As a party, have there been efforts to reconcile the two?
I should think so. I understand there have been some moves in the past to reconcile the two. I think that we need to continue trying. If it didn't work, that doesn't mean subsequent attempts wouldn't work. So I think there is a need for us to persevere.
And can you exactly tell us what the rift between the two leaders is?
Well, I don't think I'm in a position to tell you what the rift, what is causing the rift. But I should think that, you know, the former president and the sitting president are aware of the problems causing the differences. And of course, when the chiefs go there, they will be briefed and they will try to find solutions to these problems, these differences.
Again, how do you respond to those who say that the decision to reconcile the two leaders is because the NDC is aware defeat is stirring the party?
I don't want to believe that defeat is we are far away from defeat. I don't think that is the reason why the efforts are being made or efforts are being made to broker reconciliation. I mean, when you have, people in the family, they don't get on. I mean, you don't just leave the situation as it is. You make an effort to mend fences. And that's exactly what everybody is trying to do.
So the fact that the meeting has been held and the fact that you are trying to mend this situation has nothing to do with the fact that you need Jerry Rawlings on the part of the NDC to move the party forward in this year's election.
We need every member of the NDC to move the party forward. One single vote counts. So I think that we need everybody on board.
So his presence is very necessary.
His presence is necessary, just as the presence of every member of the party is necessary.
So when are we likely to see the delegation visit Mr. Rawlings to talk about this issue?
Like I said, this is not our initiative. It's an initiative of chiefs in my region. And we are only endorsing their decision to go and see the former president. So the decision as to when they want to go rests solely on them. We will monitor as to when they will be going. And if there is the need for us to facilitate anything, we will.
All right. We are grateful for your time. That was Mark Weyongo, who is the Upper East Regional Minister and part of a meeting to reconcile former President Rawlings and President Mills. This is Behind the News. Behind the news, live on Radio Ghana, Accra, and we are still on the topic on the meeting at Kumasi yesterday, where all regional ministers agreed to mobilize a number of traditional rulers throughout the country to lead a team of mediators to help mend the relations between former President Rawlings and President Mills. And joining us on the line is Ben Nelson, who is a poll star. Ben, you are welcome.
Thank you very much. Good evening to
you. Good evening. So is it a step in the right direction, this move by regional ministers?
I think too little, too late.
Why too little, too late?
You know, even though it's better late than never, the mechanism that the honorable ministers want to use, for example, chiefs, things are bad from partisan politics. And the perception will be that any chief that agrees to intervene will be seen as a pro-NDC chief. That is partisan politics. Two, I think that there are mechanisms in the party that the regional ministers can activate. You know, the founder is the chairman of the Council of Elders. And if they think that he's interested, but he can stand aside, and maybe Harry Sawyer or Dr. Gant can take the acting chairperson or chairmanship and they try and settle the issue, but it must definitely involve your wife, the former first lady, because I think that if the relationship between the two is deteriorating, I suspect that she is the cause.
So from where you stand, can you say the former president will welcome this initiative, looking at the way he has been critical of President Mills?
Well, I don't think so, because, you see, quite a number of things have happened. For example, I'm sure those who are close to Rawlings would also point to, who are close to President Mills, will also point to how within 3 months of assumption of office, the founder started criticizing the president. So both sides will have to. But unfortunately, I think that a lot of water has passed under the bridge. And, well, let them give it a try and see. And I'll be very surprised if the method they want to adopt works.
But apart from Chiefs, which group of people should spearhead this initiative?
I think that the party has quite a number of council of elders, but I don't think that the Chiefs need to get involved because of this constitutional thing binding from partisan power. I think that the NDC, like the NPP, they have enough structures within the party to be able to resolve this. If they can't, and it's not possible when it doesn't come out, then perhaps the NDC has to devise ways and means of trying to then do the campaign without him. But they should make the approach, but I don't think they should use Chiefs. No, I don't think so.
I believe the party have made efforts to reconcile the two. So what could be the reason why there is still a rift between them?
Maybe the former first lady is the key, or is responsible for, I think that the Western rift, or the inability of all the attempts to try and fight the two up. I'll give you an example. I think that 2 years ago, I used a picture of the founder and the president. I think the president went to give an address at the Mitra Academy. And it was a very nice, spontaneous picture of the two of them smiling. And I used that picture because they're giving the relations between them. We felt that it was an interesting picture. The first lady got angry. You know? The first lady got angry, we used that picture. You know, and one of her comments, she said, yes, and people are trying to use photographs to create the impression that everything is fine. I mean, I hope this gives you an insight into why I think that she is the one of the causes of the deepening rift between the two.
Ms. Essin, people are arguing that attempts to reconcile the two is simply because the NDC is aware defeat is staring the party.
Yeah, whilst Rawlings is key, it's important. We need to bear in mind that in 2000, Rawlings as head of state campaign and Miss lost. In 2008, Rawlings, in 2004, Rawlings campaign most lost. 2008, Rawlings campaign most won. So, yeah, defeat may be beside the thing. But, you know, what is about numbers? I've said before that without Rawlings and DC find it very difficult, they have to work harder to win. With Rawlings, it will be easier. So, the NDC, I'm sure, when the chips are down and the founder refuses to work for them, or campaign for them, they have to adopt strategies, you know, that will make them be able to work harder. And what they need to do is to convince, well, the Rawlings loyalists, that if you don't vote for Mills, you are putting your idol in danger in terms of how you'll be maltreated by the MPP as they did under the Kufuor administration.
We are grateful for your time. That was Ben Essin, a pollster and managing director of Dispatch Newspaper. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana, Accra. Attempts by the Ministry of Health to to directly intervene in the stalled salary negotiations between Government and Hospital Pharmacists Association, GOPSA, and the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission have been difficult. The ministry has had a series of meetings with GOPSA without any significant progress. Members of the Government and Hospital Pharmacists Association have been on a nationwide strike over what the association describes as a deliberate delay in resolving their migration onto the single sign salary structure. This evening, the association went into yet another meeting with the Minister of Health. They are trying to get the others on board to react to this situation. But first, is the Ministry of Health justified in directly intervening in the stalled salary negotiation? Austin Game, a labor consultant, is on the line to express his views on the issue. Many thanks for your time, Mr. Game.
Good evening.
Good evening. So what do you make of the Ministry of Health's interventions on issues pertaining to the migration of GOPSA members?
Yeah, thank you. Honestly, the Ministry of Health is the supervising ministry of all those who work under the ministry. And so, and they supervise or superintend over health issues that are very critical for the survival of mankind. And therefore, it is important that when there is anything, there will be some sort of consultation between the technical mouthpiece of the employer, which is the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, and the supervising ministry, and indeed the chief employer being government, so that they put their heads together and ensure that nothing untoward stay undone to prevent further escalation of the issue.
So is the intervention justified?
Yes, there is nothing practically wrong. If they should proceed without the due consultation with the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission and, for instance, go in and award a salary increase or grant a market premium without the consent of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, that will be where the error will be committed. But if they justifiably intervene because they are the supervising ministry and therefore have a stake in the ongoing feuding, then they are justified.
Many are arguing that due legal processes must be followed, so the ministry is sidestepping these processes. Is that the case? Are they sidestepping the processes?
No, like I said, they can step in, except that where perhaps their strength is not, there. This is purely an industrial relations matter, and these type of things are not just for, with all due respect to everybody, it's not just for everybody to just go in and say what they want to say. There are procedures, there are rules, there are interventions that require going beyond the traditional ways and means of managing situations. You have to go and ensure that the consistency between whatever exists as a condition of service and the Labor Act are all in harmony, with the legislative instruments that govern the intervention of National Labor Commission that sees to ensuring that how conflicts within, these establishments are resolved. Once you are consistent with these things, there will be nothing wrong. But you must also ensure that you bring the technical mouthpiece on board so that they are not taken for granted. For instance, if Fair Wages is supposed to be the one negotiating on behalf of the employer, the main employer, then it's only fair that at all times they are involved in this kind of collaborative efforts to resolve these disputes. And also to ensure that the people actually do not remain on strike while the negotiation goes on. That is completely a very bad thing that we are doing in this country that does not augur well for industrial relations.
So how do we deal with the still missing attempts to follow the legal process is not yielding any meaningful results?
Let me be very plain and honest with you. You see, you can only make right choices if you have adequate or, if you like, sufficient knowledge about the processes. It's not about having some just some knowledge. It's not just about understanding something just as any other subject matter can be looked at. This is purely an industrial relations matter. And it does not just not one of the things you can say 1 + 1 = 2. You know, so it's always proper that you get people to assist you to understand these processes. People must be willing to have their people well trained. People must understand that this is a labor law that is an applicable law. It's not written in a rocket science language. It's written in an industrial, pure industrial relations language for applicability. It's only when there is a clear-cut disagreement, total disagreement, that Labor Commission cannot do anything about it, then you are going to either the higher courts, including the Supreme Court, for interpretation of a particular thing. But even this, I can guarantee you, everything has been interpreted in the law already. So the application of it will require some level of knowledge to enable you to make the right choices at any point in time. So employers must be willing to train their people. Employers themselves must also ensure that they have adequate and sufficient knowledge about these processes so we don't create unnecessary hiccups in the system. That's all there is about.
Many thanks for your time. That was Austin Game, a labor consultant. And Gosa is still locked in a meeting with the Minister of Health. But back on the lines, Cornelius Yosen is the Director of Grievances, Negotiations and Collective Bargaining at the Fair Wages and Salaries Commissions. Many thanks for your time, Sir Yosen.
Thank you.
What is the Commission's stance on GOBSA's strike?
Well, first and foremost, I think we've made it clear that the strike action, insofar as it does not follow the procedures, is an illegal one. The Labour Commission is actually in the process of engaging us. The Labour Commission asks us that we come back and tell the Labour Commission what has happened, what has been the agreement. The last time we went, the GOSPA refused to turn up. So, in the first place, the strike action is illegal. And so far as it's illegal, it's difficult to sit down with them as a commission and talk with GOSPA.
But the association says this attempt to follow the legal processes to resolve their grievances have not yielded any good results.
No, the matter went to the Grievance Review Committee. The Grievance Review Committee came out with a decision. It says that, let me read it. It says that we therefore find the grading of 18L as far as fair for the pharmacist grade, considering that the Cohen job evaluation placed them on 18L and the Pricewaterhouse Committee re-evaluation graded them lower on 14L. So there has been a determination by the Grievance Review Committee. Now there's a process. If you are not happy with the Grievance Review Committee determination, you go to the Board of Directors or Board of Governors of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. If you're not happy there, you go back to the Labour Commission. If you're not happy there, you go to the law courts. So it's not entirely true that it has not yielded any of this thing. They may say that they are not happy with the determination, but they will not say that it has not yielded any results.
So when exactly are you going to help resolve their grievances so that they can go back to work?
Once they come on the table, once they come back and say, okay, we have we've rescinded our decision to go on strike. So we have told them that owing to the decision by the Labour Commission for the doctors, where they were given higher market premium, we are ready to look at the market premium for some grades of the pharmacists so that there can be a certain alignment or relativity with the doctors. You see, so we are ready, we have said it on many platforms that we are ready to sit down with them. But you see, we'll be setting a very bad precedent if while they are on strike, we sit down with them. We'll be setting a very bad precedent because they would have thrown the law altogether overboard and they're doing something else. Next time, when somebody else is doing it, how do you tackle it? How do you handle it? And in fact, the Labour Commission itself may bring us for contempt, but there's an order. In fact, today's graphic, page 32 of the graphic, the Labour Commission has ordered the pharmacists to call off the strike. So if we sit down with them, we will also be in contempt of the order. You see, so there are problems, and the pharmacists should the leadership of the pharmacy should tell their members that there are laws in the land, you see, and that they should sit, come and sit. As far as we are talking, there can be something out of it. But if you are not talking, then how do you arrive at any decision?
How do you see the intervention by the Ministry of Health to mediate in the stalled negotiations?
The ministry has said that they are only facilitating our coming back together at the table. As far as it's like that, we are okay. The ministry, as you know, they don't have the mandate to negotiate for salaries or market premiums, fair wages, which are that mandate. So if they are bringing us together, then they should tell, impress on the pharmacists that, you know something, this is what we have done. Go back on the table and discuss. So that's the way out.
So how best can we resolve the impasse between the commission and GOVSA?
The best way we can resolve is that GOVSA begins to respect the procedures. You see, we have the Grievance Review Committee. They've given a ruling on the grading structure. If you're not happy with it, you go to the Board of Governors. If you're not happy, you go back to the Labour Commission. You're not happy, you go to the court. For the market premium, the Grievance Review Committee has no jurisdiction over that one. So for the market premium, we are saying that we recognize that there has been disparity, not only for pharmacists, but for all groups of medical personnel, health sector personnel. So we are ready to engage all the health sector personnel to see how we can arrive at a certain relativity for some grades on the market premium. So it's difficult to say that you're resolving it when the person is on strike, is not on the table, and we don't want to set a precedent, and indeed we don't want to fall foul of the law.
If GOVSA decide to come back to the negotiation table tomorrow, would that be enough to solve the problem?
Yes, very much. You have to understand this. Solving the problem does not mean that you get all what you want. In negotiations, you win some, you lose some. We are saying that, you see, it's not because you say you want 100 that you get it. We sit on the table, you look at all the circumstances, all everything that has been put on the table. For senior grades or the pharmacists, we recognize that there's a certain disparity that has been created, and we want to solve that one. And that one is something, you see, for the other grades, you see, for example, some of the complaints is that they are aware that some grades, for example, nurses and other people, other sector personnel were brought at par with them. But if you study the history of the whole grading structure on the SSS, on the HSS, the health service structure, the nursing officer, the graduate nurse, and the pharmacist, the graduate pharmacy entrant, they were on the same scale. The thing is in front of me. They were on the same scale at the time. Now, the Cohen report praised the nursing officer a bit low. However, for the senior grading, from the senior nursing officer onwards, they praised them at time with the pharmacist grades. It's only the nursing officer grade that we somehow adjusted to come apart because we had to do some adjustment to align with it. For the senior pharmacist, the Cohen report praised them lower at 18H. But we have brought it to 19L. So it's not like we have not done anything at all for the pharmacy grade. You see, so that's where the problem is. You have a problem where somebody will say, okay, let me give me this, or otherwise I don't accept. But when you come on the table and all the factors are put together, then whatever is agreed on, you should be ready to accept it. Because the labor law says that when you are negotiating, you must negotiate in good faith with a view to reaching agreement. And if you are on the table and you don't have the view to reach agreement, it's difficult to reach agreement, you see.
We are grateful for your time. That was Cornelius Yosin, Director of Grievances, Negotiations and Collective Bargaining at the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. Is still behind the news, and these are some of your test messages. President Mills will win 2012 presidential elections massively. That's from Cardinal UDS WA Campus. Baba Mutsa UDS says there is a need for Ghanaians to massively retain President Mills and the NDC government come December 7 for a continuation of the Better Ghana agenda. The best way to curb Abduza Nandani's problem is to follow the roadmap to peace, and that's from Havis Yendi. The people of Patenga in Dabon should exercise maximum restraint for the sake of peace, and that's from Andrew Manga Boku. Reconciliation is necessary in every endeavor. NDC party executives are on the right track, and that's from Matthew Bumprugu. The former president should know that time changes. Abubakar Dani Pusiga. And people of Dabon must know that living in harmony is better than living in acrimony, so they should give peace a chance. That's from Mumuni University of Ghana. It's still Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra and on all our regional FM stations across the country. And our text line is 0266-677-5570. Now to our last story. As the biometric registration enters its second phase today, six electoral areas in the Akosi Osudoku traditional area have been suspended from taking part in the exercise by the Electoral Commission. This has forced the chiefs and people of Akosi to raise issues as to why the six electoral areas have been suspended. Joining us on the line is the spokesperson for the chiefs of Akosi, George Amano. Many thanks for joining us, George.
Hello.
Hello, George.
Hello.
Thanks for your time. So what exactly are your grievances?
We are very much aware that biometric registration exercise is going out throughout the country. We know that we are citizens of Ghana and the Badakus Constitution were qualified to be registered as voters. All of a sudden, we saw a publication in the 24th March 2012 edition of the Daily Graphic, saying that the Electoral Commission has suspended the legislation exercise in the six electoral areas in Akosi America. In that publication, it was also stated that it was the District Security Committee of Lower Manyakobo District which gave that directive. But we were a bit confused, but not happy. So we went to the Electoral Commission, went out. But when we went, even though we met the public relations officer, told us that the issue we had brought was above him, that his security officers and his commission members query Navo Kantanka, who will be the most appropriate person to respond to our complaint. He also told us that Mr. Savo Kantaka and even almost all the commission members are responsible for the various regions and they are busily going around monitoring and supervising the biometric exercise. So we realized that, one, it's very difficult for us to get the appropriate people to respond to our complaint. But being that, we must also be registered. So, that is why that we must bring this to the public domain, especially the press, so that they can help us to appeal to the Electoral Commission to register us. But one of the bones of contention for which the president was that for the publication, it was stated that it was the district committee of Lower Manyakobo district which directed suspension of the exercise. But to the best of our knowledge, we know that the Electoral Commission is a constitutionally established independent institution, not working under the authorities of the Lower Manyakobo district assembly of this Security Committee. You know that the Manyakobo District Security Committee or the Assembly has no any constitutional powers to direct the functions or the duties of the Federal Commission.
Mr. Amano, did you find out from the EC why they suspend the exercise?
Yes, I'm telling you that we went there and met the public registration officer. But we were told that, you told us that the issue we had brought was above him. Very unfortunately, to continue the appropriate people to answer our complaint or respond to our grievances were not present. They were busily going around the regions, monitoring and supervising the biometric exercise. It means we come back to sit down, don't know how it shall be registered. And we thought that we know how useful and powerful and how effective and good the press can help vulnerable people like us. That is why we thought it was that we must use conference or that forum so that the differences will be responded to, so that we can also be registered as citizens of Ghana who are qualified to be registered as potential voters.
So do you have any idea when the suspension will be lifted so that you can register?
In fact, we shall know that from the Electoral Commission. And up to now, we are not able to get in touch with them, and they did not respond to or did not make any comments on the publication that whether the decision on their own or was under the directive of the Lower Manyakubo District Assembly. And what I'm telling you, if you refer to the front page of the Daily Graphic of 24th March 2012, you see what I'm telling you, they're black and white. But they are in suspense, and let me use this opportunity to inform you that our people are the solutions, and that we don't know what we are about. And once we think that we are also qualified to be registered as potential voters in Ghana, that is why they are using this forum. Let me also inform you that it's surprising to know that because of the situation we are finding, even some of our people are being tempted to move outside the area and go and register somewhere else where maybe they will be qualified to register to. Because every Ghanaian knows the importance of the biometric registration exercise. But we are in a very critical situation, and we want to use this forum to appeal to the Electoral Commission to come and register us.
We've been trying to get the Electoral Commission to respond to some of the issues you've been raising, but we are not getting them. So as soon as we get them, we'll make them respond to the issue. But don't you think that this is the right time to do so now?
Okay. With your permission, let me just...
Wouldn't it be better for your people to move to other areas to register?
No, not at all. Because the Electoral Commission has made the whole public of Ghana aware that this time, transfer of vote or voting by proxy in future elections are not going to be easy. So if you go and register at a place where you don't reside or where you don't live, where you can vote, means in future elections, you find it difficult to come back and vote at your residential area. You may be compelled to go and vote at the place out of your wishes. And that will come out of the situation in which we found ourselves now. We have been educating our people, we have been conscientizing our people, that you and me and everybody knows the ignorance and the anxiety which comes around new policies or new exercise or things like this.
All right, we are...
If you put ourselves in our shoes, can see the situation in which we are. The whole Ghana biometric exercise is going on, except only 6 electoral areas in Akuse.
We are grateful for your time, George Amano. We are grateful for your time. That's the spokesperson for the chiefs of Akuse. We have been trying to get in touch with the EC to respond to some of the issues, but to no avail. And there's a text message says, Nanado will come 2012 by Peter Combat. Boom, 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 yo, yo. And that's where we wrap up for tonight's edition of Behind the News. Teko Ayi controlled the sounds, and my producers were Christopher Esiede, Phyllis Kofi, Bryce Agama, John Poby, and Kinsley Obenche. My summarizer was Jonathan Thompson. My name is Agatha Samoa. Many thanks for joining us.